Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the SYNLAB conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Hannah Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to SYNLAB's guidance update conference call. I'm Hannah, as the operator said. I would like to introduce you today to our new CEO and CFO, John Penno and Rob Stowell. I just ask that you keep your questions to two per person. John and Rob will provide a couple of opening remarks, and then we'll hand over to questions. John?
All right. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for making the time available to come online and listen in. What I thought I'd do is firstly just introduce myself, then my role here, given this period of uncertainty that we're in. Then I'd like to introduce Rob Stowell, who's sitting here with me. Then we'll go to the business of the day, the substance of the announcement. And then we'll make sure that we've got plenty of time to answer your questions. So for a start, hello to all the people who we've talked to and worked with in the past. As probably most of you know, I was here as the inaugural CEO of the company for the first 10 years of operations and have come back. And I've been on the board since I stepped down as CEO in 2018. And now working with the board in the role of Chief Executive Officer again. I do want to just take that moment to clarify the way the board and I are seeing my appointment. While it's an interim role, we're not waiting for anything. This is not a holding pattern. There's a lot of work to do, and we're getting straight on with it. The first step is to fully understand our position, and today's announcement is really about that. Over the last 3 weeks, I've worked pretty hard with the finance team that's in place. As you know, and we'll talk to in a moment, made a change in Chief Financial Officer. And that's all been about getting towards making sure that we can provide good clarity of where we see this year closing out rather than providing a number and then pointing to a bunch of risks that might be going on. So that's the first thing. Second is, we need to deeply understand what's happened. Clearly, this is a very disappointing result after 9 straight years of profitability. Some of it is about factors out of our control. But a bunch of it is about factors in our control as well, and that's really where we're putting our emphasis, making sure that we deeply understand the things that we as a company have done and the choices that we've made so that we can build a robust plan going forward again and get back to solid and solid profitability. And we'll talk to that later in the call. And that leads to the third part. After, understanding where we are, understanding the reasons we are where we are, that's the foundation for a good solid plan that we intend to be able to talk to you when we come back in September, closing out the year and talking about the year heading forward. So we'll be able to talk at a high level about FY22 and our expectations for that, because we can see already that as some of the big moving parts sort of normalise at the end of this year, we remain confident of a quick return to profitability, and we'll talk about the principles in behind that, but we'll talk about the detail when we see you in September. So I know you have lots of questions. Don't be too surprised if we bat those away when we're talking detail on FY22. Let me introduce Rob. So Rob, you'll hear from in a few minutes. We'll get Rob to give a quick outline of the changes that have led to us making a different forecast for year end this year. Rob has been with this business for a very long time. He was about our third or fourth employee into Synlait Milk when we were first starting to plan the business many, many years ago. He's been with us for 14 years. He came to us after several senior accounting and finance roles offshore in various entrepreneurial companies. He then worked with us as we grew up the finance team. He sat as 2IC under Nigel Greenwood for a number of years. Until about 2014, I think it was. At that point, we basically faced losing Rob to a CFO role outside of the business, and because Nigel was still firmly in the role. So we took Roel and put him into various operational roles in the intervening years. He built our planning system, which is still at work today. Then we expanded his role probably 4 years ago into General Manager of Operations, where he, as well as continuing to oversee those planning functions, he looked after all the supply chain, logistics, warehousing, which is a really important part of this business, and has done a great job of managing that for us. He's just come off leading the build of the rail siding and the new warehousing, and that's a project which has gone really well. It's come in on time, on budget, and is set to deliver the expected business performance improvements from clarifying our logistics program and getting a whole lot of trucks off the road and using rail heading forward for our Dunsandel site. So he's really well qualified. He understands the business very well from his background, from working at senior levels with his colleagues. He's always been an advisor into the finance function. He has been involved in an advisory context in the last 3 weeks as I've tried to work with the team and build a clear understanding of our current position. And so he's in a really good position to talk to the points today. So I'm going to hand him the mic in a moment. Just before I do, though, the one overview comment that I would make is that for those of you who are going to try and bridge back, use our comments and bridge back to the last forecast, it's just not quite as clean as that. This is a view that we're taking over the whole year, where we've sort of gone back to looking at everything and making sure we fully understand what's going on and presenting, and we're presenting the most accurate picture we can. So while the number is deteriorated, we don't see it as a recent deterioration in business performance. It's just a clearer view. And if you compare the two guidance statements, I'd like you to think, or I'd like you to note, that we put a number out with a bunch of risks facing it. This one is, we're really looking at those risks, taking what we believe to be a fair view of the risk of those things materialising and putting it into our expected financial results. So you won't see that we're facing a bunch of risks here. We're saying this is where we think it's going to land and we're going to manage it there. We're going to manage it as well as we can to do better than that, and then make sure we get focused on delivering a much improved result next year. So with that, I'll hand to Rob, I'll summarise again before we open up for questions.
Thanks, John. Just want to begin by saying how excited I am to be supporting John in the CFO role. It could be better circumstances, but having worked with John for 14 years with similar styles and having a very much a strong passion for the business, I'm looking forward to stepping in. So, look, to get into the detail of the release, the first thing we're going to point to is obviously the guidance is at between 20 and 30 million NPAT loss for the group, and there's three key things that are driving that result. First one's our shipping delays, and the shipping delays have been there for some time, but as we move in towards July, we've established that they're actually going to get a little bit worse, and that's not helped by the fact that we had a little bit of bulge of quality hold items towards in the last quarter as well. So at the end of July, really, we're going to probably have anywhere up to 10,000 tonnes of ingredient product, which is not going to be sitting in inventory and which we would normally have sold by our year end. And so that's a drag on our P&L in FY21. The second aspect, and we noted this again in the March release, is our ingredients business is not performing quite as well as we've seen it perform in the past, and this is down to a few things. Obviously, we had the flip of milk from A2 product into the ingredients product, but through that, our sales phasing and the volume shift with the increase in volatility in commodity prices has, we think, eroded a little bit of value. The butter AMF differential is absolutely been there and will continue to be there through to year end as well. So that's another drag on our P&L. And the third thing is, as we've moved towards our year end and we still have the uncertainty around the A2 demand, our base powder assumptions, what we produce and what we hold in stock at the end of the year is a lot lower than what we've had in the past. That coupled with some extra stock provisioning is meant another drag. And so they're the key aspects. You might ask me, you know, what's the weighting of those three areas? Look, to be honest, they're reasonably evenly spread across those three areas, probably the best way to explain that.
All right. So look, just by closing out the year, we do make a statement in there that we've got good strong support from the banking syndicate. We've got waivers for this year, which we think is the appropriate thing to have in place right at the moment. Working with them constructively to get finance in place for next year. We've got some short term debt rolling off September, October. That was always part of the plan. We feel confident that we'll get that in place, and again, we'll be able to talk about that year end. We are not planning on a capital raise, and I know that that's been a question for a number of you. We see a number of the analysts sort of writing to our adequacy. Look, we would encourage you to look backwards through this, the history of the business. There's a business that when it's running well has good operational cash flows, and we expect that that'll return. Going into next year, as we balance our base powder production with our sales of canned infant formula, even if we sell the same volumes that we've achieved in FY21, we can see a strong return to profit and a strong return to positive cash flows. And our CapEx program is running out, so our CapEx program will be much lower in the coming years. We have largely new plant and equipment that is fit for purpose. And so we're entering into a time where it's about filling up the plants, making sure that they are operating close to capacity, and a period where we really focus on walking back up that value sort of path again. Project S coming on for Pokeno, good progress on selling high-value creams into China. Again, a project that we would like to be able to talk to you about some more come September. And a period when we will be balancing up again our CapEx spend. We feel reasonably confident that we are going to be able to just work our way through this with prudence and careful management. So I'd like to leave it there and turn the call over to any questions that you might have.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Adrian Alban from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, team. I was wondering if I could ask two questions. Maybe the first one for Rob. Just in terms of, I know you sort of said it's difficult to bridge accurately those three factors that are sort of driving the business into a loss, but are you able to give us a sense of, like, is the third one, which is the sort of the inventory reset stuff, is that a cash flow impact? Or can you give us a sense of the cash impact of those three things and maybe where you sort of expect your net debt to land for the year end based on your planning?
Firstly, just to answer the cash piece, it's not so much cash, Adrian. It's more a position that we're taking. Obviously, the stock provisioning is non-cash. The infant base powder production piece is It's a bit of both. Obviously, if we are making less base powder and we're making more ingredient products, then we should be able to cash those ingredients products up. But it needs to been looked at and with the shipping delays. So if we still can't ship that product, then obviously that's sitting on our balance sheet as well, and we'll have to cash up those products in the first, the start of the next financial year.
If you let me jump in there, Adrian, if you look at our balance sheet over the last couple of years, we have been accumulating increasing amounts of inventory, and we'll be working hard to bring that back into balance. That's a big area that we can release cash by making sure our planning systems are working really well. And it'll happen naturally as we return to normality after forecasting considerably higher IFC volumes heading into this period, having a lot of inventory and then just having to work our way through that. Taking a more conservative position about where those IFC volumes end up, we'll release cash from inventory. And the shipping delay thing, it's a balance date issue. So the cash will quickly move through those volumes early in the new financial year, but we're going to be pushing them over balance date, and that pulls the earnings out of this year's P&L. It also means that we won't have the cash on the balance sheet. We'll have stock on the balance sheet at year end, but it'll rectify itself pretty quickly as the year closes out. And they're quite big numbers at high commodity prices. They're higher numbers per tonne than you would see, perhaps a year ago when commodity prices were considerably lower.
Just, hey John, I appreciate that. I've sort of had on the, after March, I sort of had around the net debt around 450. Should we be thinking of the net debt being more like 500, just to sort of give us a sense of the change here?
Yeah, we should think of it definitely having a 5 in front of it, Adrian. Yep.
Okay. So that.
We'll manage the business from here forward with a pretty clear focus on balance sheet and releasing cash where we can. But that's, if this all pans out, Rob's right, that's about where it'll end.
Okay. So in resetting our numbers, I guess academically, not so much academically, but for this year end, we should have the net debt at least starting with a 5. That's what you're sort of saying.
Correct. There's a lot of, and there's opportunity for us to work our balance sheet a little bit harder going forward as well, Adrian.
Okay. And then just the second question, obviously you've been in sort of like a reasonably intense review over the last couple of weeks. But and the profits sort of, I know you're sort of saying look backwards and then sort of look forward again, but the profits sort of come from sort of 75 million positive down to sort of minus 20 to 30. And I appreciate a lot of the plant is new, but there's no sort of impairment sort of testing. Have you looked and discussed that, or are we to assume that your review is also indicating when you've discussed with your funding providers a pretty confident return to sort of long-run earnings power off that asset base?
Yeah, look, we have turned our mind to whether there's anything that we should be impairing, and the view is no at this point. Again, we'll test it at year end, but we have solid plans in place to, return, the existing plant to earnings and making the adjustments we need to get much better utilisation out of the new pieces of plant, which again we'll see earnings come up on those. So the initial view is that we don't see any need to impair good quality assets with a plan to see them paying their way in the near future.
Okay, understood.
And I would like to remind people to look backwards. And, we've had a good, solid track record of that in the past. We have not, I think it's just a fact that we haven't delivered well on that in the last year or two. But the way we've traditionally approached these things, you've always seen us with good plant utilisation, and we'll pretty quickly get back to that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Chelsea Leadbetter from Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, guys. I guess first question from me, in terms of, John, your view here around some of the internal initiatives that have been talked about to help drive the business forward? I mean, I'm just interested in what's actually changed after your review. You know, have you accelerated anything, changed tack in any way, or I guess it's still relatively early days, but just interested in what change of direction, if any, or acceleration of direction you've put in place at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think the big change has been a much greater focus on the near term, right? So we traditionally have been a business. I think the strategy of the company remains right. You'd expect that, right? I've been sitting around the board table. It's an evolution of the strategy that we were, you know, that was in place when I was CEO. So I don't think we've got things wrong strategically, but I think that our focus on short-term execution hasn't been strong enough. And so I'm moving management's attention perhaps away from some of the big long-term things that we that are sort of not over the horizon, but 2-3 years away, and getting us really focused again on making sure we're executing in the short term so that we earn our right to and our way to those other options that come. You will have heard about projects like Turinga, which is an execution strategy that Leon and the team put together. But we're sort of steering that right back into the short term.
Okay, so I guess the way of characterising some of that is almost a back to basics, getting the operational side of things as strong as it can be before we start to think about anything on the horizon.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I guess I'm just interested.
Yep. So number one, you know, and I do go back to that, you know, the statement I made at the start, which is, you know, what's the job at hand here? The first is clearly understand where we are, and that's what we're talking about today. Clearly understand why we are where we are, and then build a plan off that to turn it around as quickly as we can. The three steps and the change in emphasis that's happening internally are aligned with those things. Taking a very good look, not so much at the things that have happened to us, but how we've responded to it. And the things that we've been doing internally that have meant that we haven't quite executed on our strategy as quickly and cleanly as we might have. You know, plants aren't full, and the way to make these big plants work well is to make sure that they're operating at or near capacity and then working your way up the value chain over time.
Okay, no, that's helpful. And then just second question for now. You've talked a little bit about inventory levels and obviously trying to focus on cash. What is there a view internally yet on what the appropriate levels of inventory or debt level is for this business at this stage?
Look, we'll give you a better view over our view over FY22 as we discuss that plan. But clearly, you know, we haven't earned as much. We're a long way from our earnings target in the last 12 months. That puts pressure on the balance sheet. But we can see things that we can do on the balance sheet to release cash to help us through this little period. And you will see us managing inventory not just to maximise profitability in the next little while, but to manage, you know, the amount, the volume of ingredients we're buying in, the amount that we hold on hand at any given time. And it does run back, as you suggested, to getting the basics right. If the manufacturing process is running really well and we're making and products are coming out and they're not, we don't have quality issues to sort our way through, you know, it's much easier to keep stock turn going quickly and to not need to accumulate the volumes of inventory that we have, you have seen accumulating on our balance sheet over the last year or two.
So should we be able to see some of this coming into fruition in 1H22, FY22? Is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah, look, it's Rob here. Look, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. We obviously, at the start of the year, this financial year, we were running at much higher demand volumes for A2, and we had a raw material you know, balance there, which was servicing that production and that demand. When the demand came reduced significantly at Christmas time, we were left with a whole lot of whey protein powder, for example, and that's quite valuable. And so we need to work our way through those balances, and we need to get down to a really efficient inventory level on that side. And it's the same with the base powder. We need to be very careful that we don't make too much base powder, because then we could run into expiry issues, and all that sort of stuff can be run more efficiently through into FY22.
It all comes under this category of getting the basics right. Back to basics, run the business really well. You'll see it coming through in profit, balance sheet, in all the places you would expect to.
Great, thanks for the colour.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Marcus Curley from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just two, as required. John, could you talk a little bit to whether you think any of these issues are significant for next year? I suppose in particular, you did mention a bit of pressure on ingredients margins, where these products are being sold into China and potentially where commodity prices are. Just keen on understanding, of these three, any significant flow over to next year.
Nice to hear from you, Marcus. Most of these issues we see as contained in FY21. The big external factor in terms of the downswing in our volumes of IFC, which actually happened toward the end of the first half, they have had a knock-on effect, but we see it contained into this year. We had a lot of milk that got diverted into whole milk powder, skim milk powder, and we were already looking at quite significant increases in that because of extra milk that had come into the business for this year. So our ingredient business grew, and in a year, I'm not going to say it was volatile, it's just that prices came off a bit at the start and then they've gone up very strongly in the second half. And if you don't get your phasing quite right, that's where you really fall out. And so it's not a question of us not achieving the margins on a day-to-day basis. I think the team's done a reasonably good job of it and getting good. We've got a great group of customers. They're usually premium end products which can attract a margin on the day. It's just about getting your sales phasing right. And as we look back, we haven't always done that. We haven't always sold the product. We haven't always sold to optimum product mix, and we haven't always got our phasing right. And that when you run up your models, you don't have to be very far out for it to make a big dent, and it has. But the good news is there are things that we can turn around really quickly.
And then just secondly, John, no mention of infant formula in the list of issues. Obviously we've seen A2 announce a big stock write down program and a desire to freshen the product being delivered to customers. Has that caused you any issues with your own sort of whey or other ingredients in terms of carrying costs or your base powder in terms of carrying costs?
No, it's ultimately determined by their ordering and offtake of these IFC products. And actually the estimate that was made right back in December about the year-on-year swing in volume was quite close. And so that's why we're not talking about it, Marcus, because this is not a further degradation of volume. This is just financialising the consequences of what happened. But also I think, it's just a reality that when the tide goes out, the rocks start showing through, and we've got a clearer idea of some of the other things that have been happening in the business during this phase when it grew very quickly, where we had very good earnings and very good free cash flow, but too much attention went on to one part of the business and not enough on other parts. And we left, what we're looking at is a year where actually, as well as that movement, we've left a lot on the table. Now, and that's why I return to, this three-step plan here that's rather my assignment is, one, understand where we're at, two, understand why we're there, and three, get a plan in place to turn it around. And that plan is not waiting around until IFC volumes rebuild. It is executing really well on the new customer that we have coming to Pocono, which we think is continue to believe is a really exciting opportunity. That opportunity was one that was built up over many, many years, by slowly building the relationship, it's one where actually we are going to see genuine diversification in our, and effectively our paediatrics business, the business that is core to the way we've developed, the things that we're really good at. So that'll bring balance and de-risk us there, and brings a key customer for that Pōkeno investment. And then making sure our ingredients business works really well. That is, it's always been a really important part of the business. At times we've lost sight of that. It's grown in volume. I'm not going to say it's grown in importance. It's been important, but perhaps we haven't focused on it as much as we should. It's core. You know, this business makes money because it has a good, solid ingredients business where we buy farmers' milk, we make premium ingredient products, and we have a really good range of customers who we sell that to. And then we march up market with higher value products, the paediatric products, the formulated products that we manufacture, and these days take all the way through to finished consumer products for our customers. That remains core. It's when we do it well, it's a very good earner. But part of the reason it does well is because it's built on that solid ingredients business. And, you'll see us getting back to getting those things working really well again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Andrew McLennan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good morning, John, Robin, and thanks very much for your comments today. Two quick questions from me, and it certainly sounds like you're reasonably confident in this regard, but just thinking about covenant management in fiscal 22, how comfortable do you feel based on how the business is likely to be running during that period? Do you think that you'll need to continue to manage the banks during that period? And maybe if you could sort of talk to how you expect that mix to change. You, John, you talk about, you know, marching up the value curve. I'm just wondering how dramatic the mix might move in fiscal 22.
Look, what you'll see us doing, when we start talking to our plan in 22, you won't see us making heroic assumptions about big changes. What you'll see are the one-off effects that we see contained to FY21 coming out of the forward projections, right? So number one, there's been a lot of talk over the last 3 or 4 months about the impact that the unrecovered fixed costs in our formulated dairy business have had, the impact that that's had. That's really we carried a lot of base powder inventory in. We haven't needed to manufacture very much, and so we've got a lot of unrecovered fixed costs in the business this year. That will be gone. We will have worked our way through that. And that's a big number. It'll return to, even if we repeat our sales volumes of IFC for next year, you'll see that, come right back in to the business. Second piece is this ingredients piece that I've been talking about. We see no reason that we won't be able to return to managing that the way that we normally do, and the earnings relative to prevailing market conditions return to normal. Now, if those two things happen, we're back robustly profitable. And then beyond that into 23, that's, with S coming on, with some other opportunities that we're working up, that's when you'll see perhaps the, us returning to the sort of mix between ingredient and value-add opportunities that we've been used to over recent years.
Okay, thank you so much for that. So just in terms of how you balance out your strategy versus the interest of your major shareholders, do you see the potential problems in that regard?
No. So two major shareholders, firstly Bright of China. The amount of business that we do with Bright has always been reasonably small. So that's not a big issue. They're largely a financial investor. When I see us doing a good job of running the business, that always comes first and foremost. We do a little bit of business with them. Actually, we're talking about a few opportunities at the moment that, if they come to fruition, it'll be a little bit more business than we've done, but it's all commercial arm's length stuff. Of course, actually, we have the same relationship with A2. A2, almost 20%, but a really important customer because we manufacture such a high proportion of their IFC business, which is so important to their business. So You'll see us continuing to work really closely with A2, given the landscape that we've got in front of us in terms of volumes, in terms of the strategic imperatives in their business and ours, and a new CEO in place over there. Like, I think you'll see us working constructively with them. They've been quite public about their need to build a clearer view of their supply chain, and that'll be really important for us because it allows us to plan better, allows us to make sure that that lets us manage our inventory better. You know, I think that we're 100% aligned on those things, and it actually also allows us to serve them better as, you know, as they have changes in their requirements in terms of offtake volume. So, look, I don't see any challenges in where we're heading and the changes you'll see us make. I think it'll help overcome some of the things that we've learned in the last couple of years as we've just been sort of growing and focusing on that growth for that customer. You'll see us taking a more balanced view across the business going forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Maya Sari from Radio NZ. Please go ahead.
Kia ora, John and Rob. Just wondering if you can give any indication on how things are tracking for your forecast milk price, and also any broader message you might be wanting to give farmer suppliers who are potentially concerned by Synlait's performance at the moment.
Yeah, thanks, Maya. Look, we have, you know, ultimately we're a dairy company and we need strong support from our farmers. You know, the farmers never like to see the company that they're making struggling, and we have this year. But, I mean, we, you know, again, I'd like to remind everybody that we've had 9 straight years of profitability and some really strong profitability, particularly through the last 3 or 4 years. And we see, you know, there's a story where we see some short-term issues and we see ourselves returning to that position pretty quickly. There's no great change in strategy, working with our farmers to make sure they're doing all they can to add as much value inside the farm gate, us rewarding them for that. You know, we've always had a promise to our farmers that we will leave them better off in the long run than their alternatives. That remains absolutely true and dear to our hearts. So, we're not at all concerned that this will see us deviate from that. But I mean, they as they should, they'll wait and see what we do. Doesn't really matter at this point what companies say. It's what that number is at the end, and we fully understand that, and we don't believe they'll be disappointed.
So you can say you're confident you can guarantee a competitive milk price, or what do you think?
No, it's not about that. Like, some years we do a little better and other years we don't do quite as well. We have some very big premiums that the vast majority of our farmers are part of now. And, you know, if you look back at the average milk price that Synlait's paid versus others in the market, by and large, our farmers have been, you know, well rewarded, and we don't see that changing.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Oxley from ACC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, gentlemen. Could I just ask, just clarifying the scope for the profit rebound in FY22? You obviously talked to the fact there'll be a reversal of the fixed overhead under recovery issue with regard to IFC, as you won't be entering the year with such a large inventory position. I think your predecessor also talked to the fact that if you were able to have better visibility with regard to your ingredient production during the year, things would have been a lot easier. And given that you sort of suggest if we assume IFC volumes are flat, you should have therefore better visibility as to how much ingredients you're going to produce during the year. Could you just give an indication as to whether that second part is likely to be an important driver of a profit rebound, and how that compares to the initial biggie that you mentioned in terms of the fixed overhead recovery issue with regard to the IFC? Thank you.
Look, again, we'll give further detail when we come together and are able to have a complete view of FY21, and we talk to how we're thinking about FY22 in September. So we won't there's one of those ones that I'll push down the road a little bit. But what we are saying here is that the recovery next year, there's two big parts to it. The first is, as you mentioned, the fixed cost recoveries that we'll get as our IF, our base powder manufacturing rebalances with our infant formula canned offtake. And the second is that we see that we'll be able to manage our ingredients business much better. It's probably fair to say that the IFB is more important, but we're seeing some pretty substantial numbers in the ingredients under performance this year and the magnitude of that rebuild next year. Some of that is things that we've done to ourselves. Some of it is just, you know, if you have a big volume that pushes over balance date because of shipping delays, the earnings from that and the cash from that don't come in until, you know, it might be a matter of weeks after balance date, but that's not there in the year-end accounts.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, guys, can you hear me okay?
We can. This really is like the last 3 years and somehow disappeared. It's all the same people.
It does feel a bit that way. Welcome back. Look, just a couple of questions, and if I can do one on 22, and I know you're kind of kicking a lot of these down the road, but I just want to make sure if I've got the main moving parts right in terms of the bounce back. I mean, it sounds like a lot of this 20 to 30 million that you're calling out today is largely one-off or timing issues. So feasibly you should get that back, plus you should be getting a recognition of margin in addition coming into next year's number. I think before you've spoken about $22 million in cost initiatives, and I'm imagining you're still pretty comfortable with that number that's out there, and if not, love to hear why not. And then as well on the ingredients side of the equation, look, I think AMF and butter have seemed to, in the last couple of trading sessions anyway, gone back to kind of their historical averages, and you would, I suspect, try and hope to get that back in there as well. I mean, if all those three things kind of unwind, I mean, you start to get those numbers that you're kind of talking about, a big bounce back in profitability on flat volumes for IFC. Would that be the, I guess, a ballpark way of thinking about, I guess, moving parts without having to put too much into other bits?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way of thinking about it, Sean.
Okay, and then following on from that, I know you've mentioned covenant waivers for this year. Are you able to say how far they've given you waivers for? I think before you used to talk about a 4x total debt to EBITDA to a 3x ex the bond. Is that kind of still the thinking on where the business has to get back to, say, 12 months' time or 18 months' time?
Look, John, it's Rob here. Look, we've gained waivers, and at the moment we're in a process to really, stress test our P&L, our full P&L and balance sheet, and discuss that internally and with the bank. So we're working through that. There's a lot of moving parts, as you know, but we'll be wanting to make sure that those forecasts are conservative enough and we've got enough headroom within both our facilities and banking covenants to make through FY22 comfortably and beyond.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. You now have a follow-up question from Adrian Orban from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning again. John and Rob, I was just wondering, can you just comment on, obviously this is as we sort of look forward from here over the sort of next 6 to 12 months, can you just sort of give us an update on what's sort of going on the regulatory front, like what sort of renewals you have to get on behalf of A2, like what other sort of outstandings are on that part of the business?
Yeah, look, nothing's changed there, Adrian. We are continuing to work towards the same dates that we've been talking to. It's a really important project for us, obviously, in terms of making sure that we get those renewals done. You know, we have to be mindful that we're in a COVID environment where travel isn't going on, but, you know, there's been good progress in terms of between the New Zealand government and China just to make sure that that is going to be achievable through the regulatory groups working together. We're not, you know, so I don't think there's any change in the way that we're looking at those risks or the way we're managing them. You know, what is there is that we still have other processes in place which may open up other areas of business beyond the work that we're doing at the moment. Again, going back in history, but those, you know, for more products, more brand slots, that's actually still in play. I'm just starting to turn my mind back with our team to how we position well, position the company properly with those things underneath the all-important objective of making sure that we maintain our regulatory approval for the China product for A2. But we don't have anything particularly to point to in terms of additional concern there.
And just for a reminder, what is that sort of milestone date for the SAMR for the China label?
And I think it's about 18 months away, but again, just look back to what we said last time, because I haven't got that. I'm not across everything after 3 weeks, and that's why
Adrian,
that date is not one of the things I am.
Adrian, we've loosely signaled mid-2022.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do know there's a lot of work going on and they're not too worried about getting their way through that.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Ma from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi guys. Just on the update today, any of the stuff that you've done around, you know, talk about a more conservative approach to things like year-end inventory, does that at all kind of, I guess, actively push earnings into 22 to obviously help make those covenants a little bit easier, given you've already waived the 21 covenant?
That's a really good question, Nick. We're not putting any attention on that. It's really just about making sure that we're being realistic about the volume and value of the inventory. And it is more than, like, I mean, it's actually about standing back and thinking about our balance sheet, thinking about where we can release cash from, making sure that we're sort of managing through this period sensibly and conservatively. You know, it goes to the overall theme of this call, I hope, which is, you know, we're looking at ways to get our sales up, get our cost structure down, and make sure that we're not committing more capital than we need to. Some of those basic things that businesses need to do to run well that we've taken our eye off the ball through the years when we were, you know, growing fast and earning plenty of money and committing capital.
Okay, cool. And then obviously you're kind of back in the old role and you've been on the board. Is there anything, you know, from what you've seen, any assets that you would consider selling over the next kind of 12 months?
At these moments, of course, you've got to look across the portfolio of assets that we have. You won't see us selling any strategic assets, but if we're holding assets that we don't need to, of course, we'd have to consider that as a way of making sure that we, you know, make that balance sheet work a bit harder, and that's, you know, 100% in line with what I've just said. How do we get our sales going well? How do we manage our costs, and how do we, you know, make sure that we're not committing capital that we don't need to?
So which assets are non-strategic?
I'm not going to be drawn on that. No, good question, though. Like, I mean, they won't be big material assets. They're not big parts of the business. We're not looking at selling off big parts of the business or anything. But you know, pieces of property or land or things like that would have to be. We would have to. You know, you'll see us thinking of it.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to John for closing remarks.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your thought and comments. And One thing that we will be doing is looking to catch up with a number of you in a couple of weeks' time when Rob and I have sort of got our, you know, Rob's been in the role for a week now. I've been in here for a couple of weeks. Look, we do, given the number of changes that have gone on, we see it as, we do want to give people the chance to sort of sit down and talk to us further about FY21 and as far as we can FY22, and then leading into a normal roadshow after we close out the year in September. So I do look forward to catching up with you and getting your ongoing observations of the business. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.